Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast, post Grand Prix 2023, Japanese Grand Prix. To be precise, it is 8 a.m. and I am joined once again from the live stream, Ben, BMPH, and Aldas, Niren, as FNG sometimes. Is that like an alter ego, Niren? How do you like, is there an FNG and a Niren? Are they different people? Or
That's actually a good question. No, I think me is less intelligent.
Oh, okay. FNG. Wow. Yeah. You get in the books. FNG.
I think FNG is like sort of has a plan sometimes, videos that he wants to do, whatever.
Who turns up for last lap? Is it Niren or FNG?
Depends on the Grand Prix. Depends on the Grand Prix and if I've had a Red Bull beforehand.
Fair.
If I've had caffeine beforehand, probably just regular Niren.
Fair.
Because it'll be too ADHD to concentrate on what's going on.
I appreciate that. Boys, how are we feeling after that race?
Well, I didn't realise we had five guests for the price of four today, but...
Yeah, facts, man.
It wasn't...
Split personality.
It wasn't the best racer in the world, but I think...
No.
I think actually Niren said... Or FNG said, I don't know who actually said it.
We're still working out.
Yeah, someone said it during the live stream. I mean, we've had a run of banger races. I think when we came back, I think Monza was a really good one. You know, Zandvoort was quite good as well.
Singapore was amazing.
Yeah. Singapore was incredible. I mean, it was actually the best race of the season. So, listen, we were due a stinker and we got one. That's for sure.
Yeah, look, listen, the stinkers.
I wasn't shocked, Ben, that this was quite a dominant Max win, and even like the gap, Lando to Oscar was big. Oscar to Leclerc was pretty big as well.
It was pretty much like a reality check for everybody, especially after Singapore, because no one really expected Red Bull to be as far as they were in Singapore, because they for whatever reason got the setup wrong, or however they ended up being so far behind. But Max today was 20 seconds ahead of Lando. Yeah, business as usual really. Not much more to say other than that.
Yeah, he was just in control. When you get a performance like that, he was probably holding a little bit back as well.
Yeah.
Because what's the point in going full tilt? You might as well save the engine a little bit.
Yeah, like, your teammates out.
And Red Bull now won the Constructors' Championship, which, again, it's, been mainly thanks to Max, let's be honest, to get it wrapped up this early. And we saw that again this weekend. But
I think quite literally, he's won the Constructors by himself anyway.
Well, he is comfortably leading ahead of... You've got everyone else kind of tripping over each other.
GP Motorsport Enterprises.
Yeah. One day... I wouldn't put it past Max to eventually have his own team. He does already have that Verstappen.com racing that he started.
Esports.
But he's doing a little bit of real sports as well.
Okay, yeah.
I think, there's... I can't remember the lad's name, but I think someone's doing GT racing under Verstappen.com racing. So he is already expanding into that, but...
Those plans are in the works.
Yeah, exactly. But someone I wanted to talk about first and foremost, because it was a McLaren 2-3. It was Oscar Piastri's first proper podium. He obviously got that sprint podium in Belgium.
Oh, yeah.
But Oscar Piastri, P3, bit of a big gap to Lando, but you got to say, Oscar Piastri, once again, delivering like the levels he's doing, obviously... Quicker than Lando. First time he's ever been at Suzuka as well. Did struggle on the hard tire in the race, but...
He's still a rookie.
This kid's got it.
This is what's...
Luca Di Meo's got to be crying into his cereal.
Yeah,
because
man.
That was one hell of a flop, letting him go.
Alpine. It's actually crazy. I think that's what it is as well. Like, he's delivered such a good race weekend from start to finish as well. Like well-rounded, good result in the race.
Mm.
Incredible qualifying session, beating Lando, his more experienced teammate, and at a track he's never been to before today.
Yeah.
Before this weekend. Never driven there at all. Had to learn the entire track. It's so impressive, man. And he's so consistently consistent.
Brilliant.
He just doesn't crash.
From a rookie is actually pretty... Yeah, I mean, he had that... He had the incident in Australia. No, sorry, not Australia. In Canada, when he hit the wall. Obviously hit the wall within Zandvoort, which then caused Ricciardo to hit him and get the injury.
Yeah.
Outside of that.
Practice as well.
Like, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, that's the thing. That's when you want to be crashing him.
Yeah, like we're trying to find a needle in a haystack, trying to like think of his errors whilst, with someone like Sargeant, it's like, which weekend are you looking at? You know what I mean? No, listen, he's done fantastic. He makes me so excited for the future. And in a weird way, I actually think, there was all this talk about Lando, where is he going to go, Red Bull or not. I actually think Zak Brown is like, even if Lando leaves, we're fine. Like we've got the next one already there. So it makes me really excited for the future. I can't wait to see how he's going to develop, how him and Lando are next season as well. And again, like Niren said on the live stream, this you know, this driver lineup, you think it's the strongest one potentially, like, you know, even now maybe.
I think it's definitely top two, I think it's top two in the way that it operates together. Because I think obviously, and we'll get onto this in a second, or a little bit about Mercedes. Obviously, George Russell and Lewis Hamilton is a great driver lineup, but they showed today
as individuals,
they might not be able to work together consistently without falling out or without causing problems during races. I think Oscar Piastri is so laid back and chilled out. Obviously, there was a little bit of tension when Lando was right behind him and was like, oh, we're going to ruin our race here. We're going to finish behind George. But within two laps, Oscar was like, well, you know, if I'm slower, I'm slower. I'll dip out the way. He's still a rookie at the end of the day.
I don't think you fought him that hard when he kind of knew that it was over.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think as they're functioning now, I think this driver lineup is top two.
Yeah. Good. And I think even today kind of proved that Lando still has that edge over
for sure.
A race day. Yesterday, I think he probably could have secured P2 instead of Oscar. But yeah, I mean, it was like, what, a couple hundredths, three hundredths or something.
Close,
so,
it, I think,
but then, yeah, today Lando proved that he's that step above, which I think, yeah, Oscar still has a bit of work to do in terms of closing that gap on a Sunday, which, yeah, at the end of the day, that's where the points are scored.
And I mean, I'm just looking now, actually, because I wanted to double check. Lando moves up to seventh in the championship ahead of George Russell.
Mm.
And the thing about, now, if that McLaren was this good all season, then it would be no big deal, you know, whatever. But think about how bad that McLaren was for the first, Austria was what, round seven, six?
Like, was it even Austria where he...
That was the first.
He got the upgrade. Okay. Yeah, he got the big upgrade in Austria. Yeah. Like, that's incredible. Lando up to P7. I mean, he's only 20 points behind Charles as well. Mm. Oscar Piastri, I mean, he's, you know, 57 points. So yeah, quite a bit further behind. But it's not over but for McLaren to get Aston Martin. No doubt about it. No,
definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
Lando's, I think, the highest non-Red Bull driver with, like, P2s.
Yeah.
He has the most P2s. That's... Not really, but I think it's four at the moment.
And they basically started in Silverstone.
Since Austria, I think Lando's the second highest point scoring driver, potentially. Maybe it's him or Perez. Maybe I think he's overtook Checo now, but that's crazy.
Yeah, so, and look, you raise a good point, Aldous. I think, you know, in terms of future-proofing McLaren, because, you know, we know that Red Bull are very interested in Lando. Lando's contract ends in, is it the end of 25? I think, because Oscar's got his new contract to the end of 26. Lando's got his, I think, to the end of 25. We know that Red Bull are very interested in Lando. Lando would be a huge commercial as well as a quality driver to come in. He's got a great relationship with Max. If Max does retire in 2028, then Lando could be a good driver to get in and get up to speed and then take that mantle. You know, McLaren are doing everything they need to right now to give Lando confidence in the project. Certainly more confidence he would have had at the start of the year. But I think it does come down to, and again, we'll get onto Mercedes, but McLaren just need to, there was a little bit of friction where, you know, Lando thought Oscar was going to let him buy and he didn't let him buy. It was a little bit feisty there to an extent, but I think it's always going to be that way when you've got two top quality drivers.
Yeah. I think for that specific scenario, it was more like heat of the moment. Lando kind of just said, or was expecting Oscar to let him buy, but it was kind of a bit of a misunderstanding when, you know, Oscar let him buy eventually. But I will say, though, to your point about, you know, him potentially going to Red Bull, Lando's in a really good place because he has his many different options available to him.
He's a driver in demand, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if that McLaren stays competitive as well.
Yeah.
He's got options where he can just stay where he is and go somewhere else. Like, his stock is high as well.
Definitely. So. And, you know, from how he's been performing the past few races, like Singapore, his defense against the Mercedes, I think, and there was that, I can't remember exactly what lap it was, but George was really, really attacking. And that was the moment where I think he won, well, Sainz won the race and he secured P2 for himself. And then again, Silverstone was another good example when he was defending against Lewis. And he secured that P2 as well. So he's really coming into zone, I think, this season. And it's exciting. I think eventually, if McLaren do get a car that's capable of challenging Red Bull, which I think a lot of people have been backing them to do, to be there with them in 24. So we'll wait and see. But I think he's ready.
I think, to be honest, Lando, to me, he's been on this level since at least 2020, because I always go back to it midway through that season. After Hungary, so that's literally before the summer break, Lando was third in the championship, only behind Lewis and Max. that's crazy. You know, Checo was behind him, Valtteri was behind him. And again, this isn't two or three races into a season. Like Lando midway through in that 2021 McLaren was third. So I think he's been on this level for at least 3 years. And actually, just really quickly on the teammate relationship, I think what happened in Monza, because there was a little bit of, I think, backwards and forwards. Actually, yeah, they collided a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oscar and Lando. And I think Andrea Stella actually, I think, had like words with them, like really like got them in a room and basically just like, that's, you know, you're not above the team. You need to sort this out. So I think it was important for Andrea Stella to kind of get that in early in terms of get that authority that he's the boss and, you know, you're not above the team. So
yeah,
I think they have a bit more respect again, like, than the Mercedes guys.
Remember, you know, Lando did, you know, 11-10 science in his first season in Formula One as well. Like Lando kind of came in as a rookie and hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's too much to expect of a rookie. And again, we've seen that from Oscar this year, that he's come in and been pretty close to one of the most highly regarded drivers. I do think, you know, Piastri's got that slightly longer contract now than Lando, and I'm sure he's being paid handsomely to, you know, to keep him, to lock him down. Because McLaren, you know, McLaren took a punt ultimately on Oscar. He'd had a year off. Mm-hmm. He'd done great in junior formulas, but he had a year on the sidelines, which could have negatively affected him. But now,
it's the expensive punt as well.
An expensive punt, but it's, I mean, if they can catch Aston Martin, that's even crazy. More bank.
Probably pays it back already.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider where they could be for next season if they continue their
career. I think one place in the constructors is like 10, 12 million.
It's about 12 million,
About 12 million, which is crazy. I'm 100% Piastri's buyout, whatever it was, whatever deal they came with Alpine, is not that. So yeah, no, they've got their monies back for sure. And you were saying, you know, Luca Di Meo, Otmar Szafnauer as well, they're all probably crying in their cereal. And, you know, that's what happens when you doubt Oscar Piastri, clearly.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about Lando in his first season, when he outqualified Sainz 11-10, when you have that natural speed, it's only really a matter of time before you then develop your racecraft and you start, you know, you get better at tire management, get better at managing a stint, you get better at all of these different things. And I think it's going to be the same. We're going to see a similar type of progression with Oscar.
That's what it always looks like to me. Like, because I think this isn't the first race where I've been like, oh, Oscar's done well in terms of position, but he's been like quite off Lando. But it's literally, the pace is there, obviously, in qualifying. Mm. Like he's beaten him a couple times now. He's started second on the grid this weekend. But I think it's just that, tyre management, just general consistency, experience and whatever. Once he's had that for two seasons, like...
Yeah, because over, you know...
World beater.
Over an hour and a half race, if you're just a fraction of a percent off every lap, you know, over one lap, you can let that... You know, you can put it all together, but to do it lap after lap, that's where obviously Lando's experience is going to show. But
yeah, stringing together one lap is not the same as an entire Grand Prix. But Oscar will learn. Again, like, he's still a rookie, you know, still he's still learning. He's come to a track, he doesn't know, you know, what the tire deck is like. He's never raced around there before. So yeah, still plenty to learn.
And again, I think, you know, Oscar, his quality of performances combined with Liam Lawson finishing ahead of Yuki Tsunoda as well this race, held him off at the end. Proving that rookies can do it in their first season.
Unless you're in a Williams.
I wanted to talk about Lawson a bit because, I mean, there's nothing more Lawson could have done this
year.
All
right, Lawson, okay.
Is there? But I think Sargent...
We'll get to Sargent.
Sorry,
a bit of both, really, because... I think the question was asked of Christian. Sky asked him yesterday. It was like, what more could he have done this year?
Nothing.
You can't, like... Lawson's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. This could be... Maybe he'll be in the seat for Qatar... Maybe not. We don't know. For him to not be in a seat next year is a bit rough. But then Ricciardo, Tsunoda. What do we make of AlphaTauri's Red Bull's decision?
I said in my video actually that it was, and I knew this was gonna come in terms of all three of those drivers. In my opinion, were good enough for that seat and almost deserved it as well. Like, I still think that Ricciardo has something to contribute as well. I know that he got a little bit of backlash after this, you know, after a lot of people thought it was a bit harsh that obviously Lawson got left out, but one of those drivers was always going to, you know, get left out and still deserve it. But I think it's one of those cases for Red Bull where with Lawson, it's a long-term plan. You know, they're going to get him in. I think they've got that vision of Perez out for 2025, Ricciardo in the Red Bull, and then Lawson steps up for 2025 proper for AlphaTauri. So yeah, Lawson's still got plenty of years left, but you never know when the next Red Bull Junior is going to come and you get, basically superseded by the next guy. So it's tricky.
That's the concern. That's the only concern I would have if I'm Liam Lawson, is there's so many Red Bull Juniors at the moment. And a lot of them felt like they were kind of a step away from being good enough. Well, not a lot of them. A couple of them felt like they were a step away, like Iwasa, for example.
Haugar won F3, but hasn't
really stepped up when he's gone to F2 Hadjar's and stuff. You've got
as well.
Hadjar's been all right.
Yeah, he got Maloney.
Maloney's been all right.
Maloney's been like a bit better towards
There's
the end of the season.
There's six of them to choose from. And just Powdy. F2 alone.
But I mean, a lot of them are going into a second season in F2. Haugar and a couple others, like Deruvela and shit, like, have been there for ages. But a couple of them are going into a second season now. Mm. If someone like an Iwasa or a Maloney, for example, wins F2 next season, that is a headache for Red Bull to consider, potentially.
It is, I guess. I
think Lawson's already proven it in a Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, Lawson's could well win Super Formula. He's got the finale in Suzuka in next month.
This was the warm-up as well.
His title decider.
Yeah, exactly.
But I tell you what a stinker from Red Bull and Helmut Marko to not put Lawson in that seat and put in De Vries instead.
Oh yeah, massively. Yeah.
Can I just really quickly just to defend De Vries, because I've got to do it.
This is hard.
In my opinion, like after that Williams performance and off the back of his junior career, he deserved a chance in Formula One. Like I'm never going to be one of those people that's like annoyed about the fact that he got a chance in Formula One. He chose the wrong team. He should have gone with the Williams. Not only was AlphaTauri the wrong team, it was the wrong environment. The way they threw him out and the way they like didn't even care about him even afterwards, it showed that it was the wrong environment from the very beginning. Because I genuinely think that if he went to Williams, I'm not saying he would have been amazing, but he would have done better than what he did this year. So he made it was his choice, wasn't it? He chose to go to AlphaTauri because he saw that Red Bull opportunity, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was confirmed that Williams actually offered him a seat. I'm not actually sure.
I think Capito, like he basically was ready.
But I guess, yeah, I think in isolation, you know, yeah, De Vries, I think, merited the opportunity. But for Red Bull to actively not look at Lawson, not consider Lawson, and just go for De Vries, obviously, you know, if that had gone the other way, I can only assume that Lawson would have done as good a job as he is now. And
at the start of the season.
Yeah, and would still, you know, it would still be him and Tsunoda now, and Ricciardo wouldn't have got a sniff, most likely, anyway.
I think it kind of shows the brutality of F1 as well. Because when you have so many different options to choose from, you then have the what's paradox? I can't remember exactly what it's called.
Yeah.
It's like you have too many choices and you know, you have too many good options that you end up making a decision that's, you know,
it's easy to say in hindsight.
Exactly. Yeah. And in hindsight you could say like De Vries shouldn't, you know, have been given the seat. But as I think to Aldous's point, it was the circumstances and the build up of what led to it, you can understand why they made that decision.
Yeah, because even at the start of the season, we were kind of all saying like, I don't know if any of the Red Bull juniors are proper ready. Like I remember saying that. Like, I've definitely said that on camera on this show. Mm. I was like, Iwasa's good, Lawson's good, but neither of them like absolutely blitzed F2. So maybe just give him like one more season. And then, you know, De Vries wasn't the guy. Lawson's come in and done a good job. I feel bad for him, but...
Yeah, and look, I think
as long as that place is there for him potentially,
he's chilling in Harvard, mate, now.
He's confirmed as a Red Bull reserve, but also Christian was asked yesterday about whether Lawson to Williams could be a thing, and Christian didn't say no. He didn't shut it down, but also we're talking about this in the live stream. I don't think there's a massive upside for Williams. To take Lawson. Do I think he'd do a better job than Sargeant? Yes.
For just the 1 year.
And then he goes back to a direct competitor. So is there enough in it?
You're him for someone else.
Exactly.
It does.
You're totally right. That's why.
And a direct competitor as well. Yeah. Not just another thing, a direct competitor.
He didn't say, no, Williams is not an option. He said, Williams wouldn't, I don't think Williams would take him for 1 year. Mm. And that means that he's planning to get Lawson in the AlphaTauri for 2025. And yeah, for Williams, it just doesn't make sense. Like you get one good year of Lawson, brilliant, but then you're literally giving him to a direct competitor. Like AlphaTauri, we don't know obviously where they're going to be, but you're developing another team's driver who potentially, you know, is going to then bite you in the backside in 2025. Mm. So yes, it would be good in the short term, but it's just not worth it for only 1 year. They would want a 2 year commitment minimum from Lawson.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, because it's just...
And Oscar showed, you know, with Alpine that you can have a year on the sidelines and still keep fresh. And Red Bull need to give Lawson as much like track time as they can possibly give him. And maybe give him another season of Super Formula, maybe, because he could end up winning that.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be a good idea for him to stay out of...
He battered Albon in DTM. Don't forget that as well. Like he was the best no, he wasn't the highest placed rookie because he wasn't a rookie last year. But he finished ahead of Sargeant in F2 last year as well. Came through at the end. So yeah, I mean, he's got all of the ingredients. But again, it does call Sargeant. I mean, this was an absolute stinker from Sargeant again this week.
Actually, really quickly, I want to go around. Who had a worse weekend, Sargeant or Perez?
Oh, that is
Perez. That's a difficult one.
Perez, Ben's gone for Perez.
I think
the thing is Sargeant's had a stinky weekend. Perez had a really bad race.
I think it's Checo.
He retired twice, actually. It's got to be Perez.
All the atrocities of the race made up for Sargeant's entire weekend.
It was not like, I mean, Sargeant's, look, again, some people are like, it's harsh on Sargeant, but should the standard be high enough? You know, people say about Yuki, like, yeah, Yuki was proper lucky. Like, he only got to stay on really because of Honda, and there wasn't a strong Red Bull.
If we're looking at Yuki's career, like, realistically, I love him now, and I think he's proven why he should have been given the chance.
He was even like,
well, you always go back to
how he picked
that press conference. Where was it? I thought it was in Spa or Monza.
I think it was Monza.
It was brilliant.
Even he was surprised. Like, and fair enough, you know. And I just think, like, you look at what, again, Lawson's done, what Piastri's doing, like, it's not, and you look at, again, Lando about qualifying science in his debut season, what Leclerc did to Ericsson in his first season.
You're looking for peaks, aren't you? With rookie drivers, you're looking for the peaks, and they just, forget about the bad races, because he's had plenty, and, you know, the crashes as well. I haven't seen, like, the peaks. Like, yeah, the qualifying in Saudi was good, but other than that, where have been the good performances? I mean, he gets into Q3 for the first time in Zandvoort and then bins it straight away. So I think that's the problem as well. People talk about, you know, that ceiling that he will potentially reach or potentially, you know, show it next season.
He's got to stop crashing.
Where is that? I don't know what that ceiling is even.
There's a ceiling there, but like...
At least with Yuki, we saw the pace in 2021. There was like, you know, some good stretches.
Yeah. With Yuki, it was like, you looked at him and went, right, this guy's crashing way too much. But like, I feel like if he actually got his shit together, he could do a madness. And then he did at Abu Dhabi. Obviously, some good luck involved in that. But that final lap, he made some crazy
that move on Bottas.
Like, holy shit, this guy's got some minerals, right?
That was one of the worst like pieces of Bottas defending I've ever seen. Like, that was his day off.
Facts. It was still a crazy move. And it's like, Yuki was in a better Alpha... was it an AlphaTauri back then?
It was a good car that year.
That was a better AlphaTauri than what Logan Sargeant's been dealt with here in the Williams. But, you know, Alex Albon's picked up some points here and there.
Alex is proving it's not a terrible car.
Like, the one thing I've always said
it's comparative to your teammates. If you remember, as well,
in 2021, the two rookies, Mazepin and Schumacher, like, they had a really bad car. Like,
oh my God.
It was so difficult to even know how bad/good they were, because that car was a back marker. This Williams is decent. This Williams is a Q3 point scoring car in some races. And so no one is expecting him to be near Albon, but there hasn't been enough peaks. There hasn't been enough consistency. And the problem is he's not stringing together the weekends. He's not having like a decent quali and then a decent race. It's like something is always going wrong, either a bad quali or a bad race. And so... But yeah, it's, you know, what happens? Is he kept on because there's not really better options out there?
Well, yeah, because if we're not saying Lawson, which I don't think they would take on Lawson.
Yeah.
Who would they... Obviously, Toto's been pushing for Schumacher a lot.
I think they've already said no.
I think someone sent data to Williams. Vowles was like, you just don't want it.
Yeah. Which is quite...
yeah. She's so peak. But I hear it, man. Yeah. But like,
put that email
and Schumacher would like shunted a lot of Haas, so that can't be Williams.
Yeah, it's not...
You want someone who's like... a safe pair of hands.
Vesti might win F2, but I've been saying for time, I don't really know if that's a proper upgrade, really. You know, if you're going from Sergeant, rookie bin it a lot.
Maybe not just clear.
You're just restarting the process again for no reason. It's not even your driver.
I know Felipe Drugovich has been pushing quite a lot for it, and he's got a little bit of backing as well from South America. So, and he is a decent kind of enough driver that Aston Martin will obviously push for him as well. So he could be an option, but that's the only one. I mean, is there any experienced drivers like on the sidelines that you guys can think of that might be in? Because there's no Hülkenberg now to just Hülkenberg's an easy one to just go
Palou,
back.
I'd love
that. Palou would be sick, but I don't think it'll happen.
I think he's signed his future with Ganassi.
That'd be sick. You said this actually on the show, that realistically in terms of the AlphaTauri situation, it would have been quite interesting to see Yuki Tsunoda end up at Williams. Obviously, instead of Logan Sargeant.
I think that would have been the best option.
I think that would have been the best option in terms of getting the best drivers on the grid.
But obviously, you know, if you're Yuki, I understand why it's just like, you know, just keep me in this AlphaTauri.
I think it's just
2025 silly season.
I mean, I want to know what your guys' thoughts are. That thought about putting Yuki in the Williams and then putting Lawson and Ricciardo in the AlphaTauri, is that I don't see a future for Yuki at AlphaTauri, at AlphaTauri stroke Red Bull.
Yeah.
He's never going to get into the Red Bull. And if you stay at that team for long enough, you're going to get replaced by a younger driver. So Yuki's time at that team is capped anyway. He's gonna be there 2 years max, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So why not just start fresh at Williams?
I think Yuki's kind of developed nicely now that he's had the experience. He didn't hit the ground running, but he was given the time because he got lucky. And I think Honda obviously want to keep him developing and moving on so that potentially, I mean, again, look, we saw Fernando really upset and, you know, a bit distressed on the radio with his team for the first time this year, really.
I saw you guys enjoying his toxicity. I saw you guys well, enjoying
it. Oh, we love it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it was a throwback, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
To the McLaren days, GP2 almost.
Engine.
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of that. And it's just like, you know.
Suzuka and Fernando Alonso.
it just brings out the worst in him. Yeah.
You know, if Honda do, you know, with Aston Martin want Yuki to kind of come in at some stage, which is obviously talked about a lot, then keeping him in a seat where he's doing well, because, yeah, I think he's doing pretty well in the AlphaTauri. Mm-hmm. But then again, with Lawson coming in and kind of matching him, that kind of looks bad on Yuki as well.
In the Williams, him and Alex for the next 2 years. I mean, there was rumors of Alex.
Lovely little line.
Before Sainz went on his little run, there was a lot of rumors about Albon potentially to Ferrari if he leaves. So I think there was room at Williams for Yuki, but it's very clear that he's the one that decided, I want to stay at AlphaTauri.
Yeah, and when are Honda becoming the power unit suppliers for
26. Yeah. New engines, yeah.
So that could be a move he could make at some point.
And look, again, I think as well, if Sargeant is to stay, I do think he will improve. I do think there's been certain peaks there that I think just with
worse
consistency, but again, I just think a team like Williams, can they afford to, you know?
Yeah, I'm concerned.
Give him that time.
I'm more concerned about how he looks like he's overdriving now. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's overdriving for a reason, and it's because he knows if I don't get this together, I'm fucked, I'm out of it.
He's in that.
So that it feels like he's almost been given, like, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, obviously, but it feels like he's been given an ultimatum and he's like really overdriving. Mm-hmm. He's making mistakes, but like literally since Zandvoort, it's been ridiculous. Like Singapore nightmare.
James Vowles is now, I remember when we were in Austria, he was on the fan stage and I could hear on the tannoy, he was talking about Logan and he was saying like, oh, you know, we're really impressed with his speed and, you know, he's just obviously gaining experience. And it was clear that he was trying to like big him up a little bit, even though he was still struggling at that point. On the pit wall, like when Logan crashed, he was just like, yeah, he's not getting it together. And that tone, I could hear that tone in his voice, in James Vowles.
Yeah.
He's losing his rag a little bit. He's losing the arm around the shoulder. You know, how long, and people, especially on Twitter and fans always say, oh, you stop being so harsh on drivers, you need the arm around the shoulder. But what about if it doesn't make a difference? How long is too long for you to give someone a chance? So
yeah, there's only so much you can really deal with. And I think in terms of crash damage, he's the highest of everyone. Yeah. And yeah.
He's just racked up the bill more.
No, exactly.
Because even today, what he hit Bottas. Poor Bottas, by the way. He's getting slung around like a rat hole.
I mean, there's 20 seats in Formula 1 and there's plenty of other drivers who deserve a spot just as much, if not more.
If you're not cutting it, then
so is it unfair to be so critical and expect when you've got, again, Piastri, Lawson, these drivers showing that it can be done? Mm-hmm. You can be at least somewhat close to your teammate in your rookie season. I don't think that's too much to ask, but someone else wanted to talk about who's had not the greatest weekend.
Talk about distances away from teammates, then this is probably... Oof.
Checo Perez, 7-10.
The man who's second in the 2023 World Drivers' Championship.
Yep. It's just...
I was going to say...
Not by much. It's 29 points, I think, to Hamilton.
It's not by as much as it should be. It's literally 33.
Okay, 33. Oh, yeah, because, yeah.
It's going up, brilliant. Yeah,
33 points to Hamilton.
Stonks.
Sergio Perez, another poor weekend. Mm. And I did, once the race finished, I put a little poll out on my Twitter. And I just wanted to ask, whose season was worse? Maybe a bit of a recency bias here.
I was going to say, you know.
Albon 2020 or Perez 2023. And with 7,760 votes, 81% are saying Perez 2023.
Yeah, look, listen.
There's a lot of recency bias.
The stats don't lie. The stats don't lie, though. Get me.
Sorry, I had to put that one
You're
out.
Asking F1 to of all places.
Yeah. Which is
expecting to get a reasonable
trust
answer.
Me, bro. Look, I think that it was such a bad weekend for Checo. Such a bad weekend for Checo. Like,
unfortunate to start. Just a Constantino, like a lot of people in one space, four guys going for the one piece of road. Could easily have been Hamilton who had that damage instead of him. What it is. Race lap one incident, fine. But qualifying, you're too far away. You shouldn't have even been in that position in the first place. Got a fucking awful, he got a horror start. So that's why he's even in that position in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the move on Magnussen, I'm not even exaggerating.
Last week.
It is one of the worst attempts on overtake I've ever seen in my life.
It was bad.
I'm genuinely, like, given the context of your car is so much quicker.
Yeah. You know what poll you should put up? Which move was worse? The one on Albon or the one on Magnussen?
Yeah.
50-50,
both, mate. Both
on
shocking.
On Tsunoda as well.
See what F1 Twitter is saying.
The one on Tsunoda. Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's like three incidents with other drivers in probably the space of about 60 racing laps.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've got that kind of car, and again, like, qualifying pace has been an issue. Race pace hasn't been much of an issue for Checo. Like, typically he's been better in race pace. Still not great, but better.
Yeah.
Just be patient. Just pick your spot, make your way through. I mean, you can make moves into that corner. We saw multiple drivers chucking it up the inside, but you need to be at least somewhat close to the back of the car before you do it.
You need to be in the same area code before you do it.
And he locks up and contacts and then...
And especially when you have such a car advantage. I mean... Yeah, that it was
tires that have fallen off in two laps.
It was a howler. It was a stinker. It was a honker. There's not enough superlatives, but to describe that performance. And I said actually on the stream, I think that's probably his worst ever race in Formula One. Retired twice. That's one for the history books.
Yeah, that was crazy. By the way, Red Bull bringing him back out of the pit lane to serve a penalty and then retire him again is
I've never seen that
all before. Time. Yeah. Great moments in Red Bull history.
I don't even like know where you'd even pin it down to or what you pin
yeah,
it down
I don't
to,
get
it's
it.
Not the start of the season when, you know, the points are relatively equal and he's trying to make a championship challenge again. I mean, that lasted about four races at the start and pretty much it died after Miami.
Is it purely confidence? Can it just be purely confidence?
Is he under much pressure?
Like now he knows he's secure.
His seat's secure.
His seat's secure, but at the same time, it's always at the back of your mind, like, there's a lot of, you know, I'm probably going to get replaced by Ricardo at some point. I want to try and prove myself. Maybe that's affecting him somewhat.
Yeah.
But Checo is a proven quality driver. Like, the years he's been in F1, the podiums with Force India, Monaco, Azerbaijan, great job at Sauber. Didn't 2020, he was unreal. Like, arguably he was, him, Lewis and Ricardo. It's funny that, Perez and Ricardo since then have had two pretty poor times of it. But, right up there in terms of, caliber of driver, he was right to replace Albon.
Like, I think it's purely
Red Bull
pressure.
Had to pick him up.
I still think he's a quality driver. Like, you put him in that McLaren, that Aston Martin and Alpine, kind of that level. I think he still does a really solid job.
But he's already talking about options for 2025 outside of Red Bull.
He's the one that started the conversation like, I might leave.
Because he knows, he knows what it's like to be dropped mid-contract, because that's what happened to him at Racing Point. And I mean, Red Bull are the most cutthroat team on the grid. It's just, I just don't understand it, because he is quality driver with a lot of experience and it's just not showing at all.
I mean, when you look back and talk about, like the Racing Point in 2020, I think that was the car that suited him best.
Mm.
And I always say, like, you only see the best of a driver in a car that they're completely synonymous with. So like Max with the RB19 this year, Max with pretty much any car you give him, he does as much as he can with it. But Checo really struggles with the amount of oversteer that the Red Bull currently... Well, the way they design the car is obviously to maximize speed, but it doesn't necessarily play to Checo's strengths, because he likes a little more understeer and likes typically shorter corners, I think it is, which is why he does so well around street circuits, whereas Verstappen doesn't do not so well, but there's a bit, the gaps are just a little bit closer.
Yeah,
and then
in Singapore, as bad as that was, I was saying... Singapore from Sergio is like one of the closest races compared to Max. It's crazy.
And I think as well, like, in some ways, his experience kind of goes against him in the same way that Ricciardo's experience went against him at McLaren, because he was so conditioned to a certain style of car, Ricciardo, in the Red Bull and the Renault, where he got the Renault to a good place where it worked with his style.
Yeah.
And then McLaren, like, he wasn't able to change. He had to think about his driver. He couldn't drive on instinct. But Oscar's come in is super young, super fresh. So, you know, you're more, I guess, pliable to, you know, working with what you're given, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
you don't actually know what your style of Formula One car is, because it's very different to a Formula Two or Formula Three car. So yeah, you're more malleable developing. Or pliable or whatever, you know. You're
Look, one thing again, this is, I know you mentioned this and got a bit of, but like, is it out of the question to consider Lawson alongside Verstappen because he is younger and potentially more likely to adapt to that style of car, kind of like how Oscar's adapted to the McLaren, even though the McLaren is a weird car to drive. Like, science has talked about it, Lando's talked about it. Ricciardo, he experienced it and showcased it to the world just how, you know, it can be a really tricky car.
Like, yes, it's out of the question.
I mean,
I don't know. It wouldn't have been out of the question if they'd actually put him in the AlphaTauri for next season.
Yeah, it's a gamble for sure.
I think if they put him in the AlphaTauri for next season,
Perez is not doing, like, I think there's lots of drivers who would do no worse than Checo in this Red Bull right now.
I think the problem is you've got to look at it, I think, from a more long term perspective. Like, Liam Lawson for me is, so far, given they've slapped him in an AlphaTauri and he's actually beaten Yuki, I think, at every Grand Prix, but Yuki's obviously had technical issues at Monza and Singapore. The technical issue at Singapore being Sergio Perez's sidepod. but he's definitely impressed. But I think he's probably the only Red Bull junior that I could see right now that has the potential to actually end up in a Red Bull. Mm-hmm. Iwasa's good. Maloney's good, but you're going to have to see how they do next
Lawson's
season.
Proved Lawson's proved it. Lawson's proved in an F1 car, yeah, he can be competitive.
That he can do already. The business. If you're Red Bull, don't rush another young driver into a Red Bull car.
Because you will ruin him.
Helmut waking up one day.
I could see it happening, but is it the right thing to do?
First of all, my client has an ironclad contract for next season, so Checo is not going anywhere. But no, joking aside, don't stunt Lawson's growth. I mean,
just let him develop AlphaTauri.
Like, you do not just, what have we learned from like putting Gasly and Albon in there?
Would be funny though, to be fair.
It would be hilarious. It'd be brilliant. Imagine if he beats Verstappen as well. Brilliant.
But anyway, Liam Lawson wins!
Liam Lawson's actually the goat. But no, it's, and also hilarious for Ricciardo. He wants that Red Bull seat so bad, he gets the AlphaTauri seat. Lawson gets it in front of him. Brilliant. I don't see a single universe where that ends up well, honestly.
That's like Doctor Strange shit. There's no universe.
I'm looking into all of them, and Lawson
finishes eighth in all of them.
His reputation would be even worse than what Albon's was at the end of 2020, because at least Albon had that kind of body of work to bounce back on.
No, you're right. And I think, you know, Williams took a shot on Albon and there was no guarantee. I was confident it'd do well, but I'm biased. So of course I was.
And to be honest, like, Albon's second half of 2020 wasn't even that bad. Remember, he got Rook of the Year that year. Based off of, you know.
Oh God, yeah. His second half of 2019. Oh mate, yeah, he was quality.
He was really good. That's my bad. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out of the question.
No, I think the thing is, I do wonder, you know, Lawson, well, they're all like Red Bull employed drivers at the end of the day. So they're kind of free to do what they want at the end. But yeah, I think that would maybe be a bridge too far. I do wonder if next year, I said this again, like, if there are other teams somewhat competitive with Red Bull on a car basis, that will, you know, Checo, they've got a clear car and you can't rely on Checo to qualify a P2, like nowhere near every race.
Yeah.
So imagine if everyone else catches up, they are going to have to rely on Max on his own to do the job. But like you said, you know, Ben earlier, arguably that is the better way to do it. Better to just rely on Verstappen and not have any inter-team beef.
Way to do it when you have a dominant car.
If
anyone at all challenges Red Bull next season, they're in trouble. Because Sergio Perez can't do that.
For the constructors,
obviously, yeah. For the drivers, Max Verstappen will probably, and I suppose that's,
I mean, Max is winning the constructors by himself already.
Well, there's 7 points between P1 and 2.
But all I'm saying is, if McLaren turn up with a car, I'm not saying this is going to happen, by the way, it's just hypothetical, but if McLaren turn up with a car next season that's as good as Red Bull's,
is that what Lando's been telling you?
Next question. no, if that was to happen, Red Bull are suddenly that clear 1-2 dynamic where Sergio Perez is so far off that it's fine because at least they're not battling each other, kind of falls apart. Because if Checo's finishing seventh in a Grand Prix, McLaren could be getting a 1-2 or a 2-3 or something. Yeah. And then you're actually in danger in the Constructors' Championship. It depends what they value more, drivers or constructors, really.
But. Yeah, I think 2021 was, they probably valued drivers more.
Mm. Facts, yeah.
Because, yeah, when they brought in Checo, they didn't really expect him to be on Verstappen's level straight away.
Yeah.
But yeah, for dominance-wise, it doesn't really matter if they have a dominant car, they can... Yeah, like this.
And how much these teams really care about constructors? Like, yeah.
Does anyone remember if that Mercedes won it in 2021?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no one really cares.
I mean,
it's nice for the teams. To be honest,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just what the teams
even for. From a team point of view, having a driver's title, you know, your name next to that name.
Yeah.
You know, Red Bull next to Max Verstappen, Red Bull next to Sebastian Vettel, you know, Mercedes next to Lewis Hamilton, like that carries more weight long term.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's what people kind of remember.
I'll tell you what, Mercedes won't be winning a Constructors' Championship anytime soon if their drivers keep falling over.
Yeah, that's the thing. Let's talk about that, Niren. That is a very good segue.
But again, we talked about the two driver lineups with the Mercedes and, say, Mercedes and Red Bull. So we're going to get onto the Mercedes driver lineup now. But if they had an equal car, how much would Checo be a disadvantage, but how much would Lewis and George be fighting against each other, taking points off each other?
So there's a balance. There is a balance.
How do Mercedes manage these two? They've signed him up for another 2 years.
That's going to be great. It's going to be so good.
Do you know what's scary is that we've seen a lot of these, you know, relationships go bad. I've never seen it end up good after it's already started. Like after cracks have started to show, I've never seen it end up well. Like, I mean,
I can't see it getting any better.
Sergio Perez, there was cracks with like Max and Checo, but they were nowhere near as close as the, you know, Lewis and George are. I've never seen like this relationship be repaired. So I'm honestly not sure if it even can be. Like, it just needs to be contained, if that makes sense.
I think we'll have to see how good their car is next year and how much it suits one driver versus another. Because let's say it suits Lewis more. I don't think they'll have that problem because Lewis will most of the time will be ahead. But for this year, typically the W14 has been on a bit of a knife edge. So to get it into the right operating window requires like extreme amount of precision and almost like luck at times, because sometimes they don't
very
even track know
why specific as well.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they don't even know why the car's fast. And when you have either one driver ahead of the other, or you know, you get that you get flash points like that where they cross over each other on track, trip over each other like today. You know, Lewis was at the end of his first stint, I think probably had, you know, dirt on his tires or something after running off track and was trying to defend, forced George wide. Obviously, George was pissed about it.
And then Lewis just boxed straight away.
But it was to maintain position, which understandably so. But at the same time, at the back of George's mind, he's like, I have to get my own back.
They're both in the wrong.
And you said, actually, it's very different. Like when you're on the same strategy and genuinely fighting for position, that's one thing. But then like you said, when you're on an alternative strategy, then you do have to work together. Then it is for the good of the team, but that comes from the management. You know, Toto wasn't here. I don't know who was managing Mercedes. Like I didn't get a chance to kind of see, but yeah, it's going to come down to the management.
It just feels like there's no like club captain at the moment. No one's going like, right, lads, come on. I know you both want to be number one driver. I know you're both great, but like,
I mean, realistically though, it should be Lewis. He's been there the longest. He's won 6 championships with them. He's won however many races.
Still the best driver right now. I think obviously, you know, history is one thing, but like Lewis is still, I think we're starting to see that there is there's a step toward, you know, compared to Lewis when it comes to, you know, George.
Is 75 points behind him in the championship.
Yeah.
I think George is carrying a degree of frustration here as well. Like,
facts.
Bear in mind, like he spent 3 years in the Williams, seeing Lewis and Valtteri get all these wins, and he feels like he should have been promoted earlier, didn't, gets promoted, and then he gets promoted to the Mercedes W13, which was fucking awful.
Wheelbarrow 13.
Yeah.
And also he's not, you know, again, who knows, maybe if 2021 goes different, maybe Lewis isn't in the sport anymore, retires with 8, I don't know, maybe. I think George was always hoping to, yeah, Mercedes were kind of, their hand was forced to promote George because he's a quality driver, obviously, and to leave him in Williams for any longer, you know, wasn't really tenable. I mean, Williams were trying to replace him.
Chance of losing.
I think Red Bull would have probably snapped him up.
Williams were trying to replace him when they were really short on money.
Like, they K-Mag in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in his book or something.
Yeah, and K-Mag were like, how can I take this team seriously if they're trying to replace me with George, not with Latifi?
Yeah.
He's like, no, this is not a serious team. And so
it's not a serious organization.
No. Yeah. and so I think, you know, I think that frustration, and I think George feels a degree of entitlement to be able to come in, and which I get. And again, I think a lot of these drivers have a big ego. I think we see that a lot from George, and I think he expresses himself a lot, and he doesn't get the most liked. He's not the most liked because obviously Lewis has got a huge fan base and big support. And I think, you know, coming in and trying to upset the apple cart, kind of how, you know, when he came in alongside Fernando and McLaren.
Yeah.
It's almost that there are similarities, I think.
Yeah.
So that kind of dynamic.
Dynamic, yeah, definitely. Because he is competitive. Let's not get it wrong.
Against eight all in qualifying, that's...
Yeah, and...
Any level.
I think the thing with George is, like, I feel Mercedes really want him to do well, but sometimes he gets in his own way. So for example, like, there's just very, very small mistakes, but they always add up. So, like, you know, you mentioned he's like 70 points down in the championship. The crash in Singapore, obviously, yeah, didn't help. Yeah.
Canada as well.
Canada, a couple times, you know, during qualifying, dripping over Lewis and Spa
and in Spain as well.
So, you know, I feel as though Mercedes, they have the ability to manage it. But, you know, it requires cooperation from both drivers at the end of the day. If, you know, Toto can sit there and say, like, oh yeah, guys, please don't do this, or, you know, keep the cars both, let's bring both the cars home. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's up to them to do that. And I feel like George is a little more of a loose cannon than Lewis. Lewis is a lot more experienced. He's generally a very clean driver. So, you know, when he's hit something like that, he would obviously abide by it. But with George, there's a bit of that kind of wanting to prove himself. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
I think, like Tomo said, yeah, I do think there is a little bit of entitlement with George, and he just kind of needs to realize that, you know, he should be a world champion one day. He's got the speed. There's no doubt that he's got the raw speed. He needs to harness it in the right way. But, like, when he was beating Lewis at the beginning of the season in qualifying, Lewis just grit his teeth. Like, we didn't hear anything, you know, from Lewis, really. Now, like, you know, Lewis has really kind of stepped it up, or, you know, just, you know, started qualifying a little bit better as well, like we saw in this race. And it's just, I don't think George can take being the number two a little bit. And he just needs to realize that your time will come. And unless you're absolutely just quicker than Lewis right now in terms of raw speed, out qualifying, out racing him, then you've got, like, an argument to kind of be the guy. Mm. But at the moment, he just needs to calm down just a little bit, make sure every single time he's working with the team. But, and I just, yeah, there was a bit of entitlement just at the moment. You know, Lewis is more entitled to feel like that, but we don't see that from him. You know, he's the one that's won six world championships at that team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's just ego control just a little bit from George, and I think it might help him.
Yeah, because, and as well, I think, like, where Lewis is so established within that organization, you know, George, I don't know, I'm just not, like... We've seen these moments of these lapses where he's made these errors, and it does, I think, call into question to a degree his, whether he's got the kind of, I guess...
Leadership?
And the composure. Attitude to... Yeah, I think composure is a good word. Yeah, to get it over the line, because I think we've seen, you know, other drivers fighting similarly. Like, for example, I think Lando's demonstrated more composure than George.
Definitely.
Singapore. In those tough moments where you've got to just get it right. And it's, again, George going out in Singapore, that's a matter of centimetres, right? But that's the difference. Lando scraped the barrier and was fine.
Yeah.
George scraped it a little bit more and wasn't fine.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. So, you know, you've been in Singapore. You had a really good weekend up until that point, but we talk about those fractions. You should kind of get off your pedestal just a little bit for this race. Like, you're the one that kind of let the team down a little bit. Just make sure that you're working together, kind of restore that kind of, you know, trust in yourself.
Yeah, coming back in and beefing your teammates straight away is...
Especially when you're on different strategies.
He's got to play the long game, isn't he?
It's just hard in the heat of the moment, obviously, because, like,
yeah,
again, he does feel wronged off the bat because Lewis has shoved him off the track. And I totally get
And Lewis was wrong, by the way.
Lewis was wrong for that, because you're pitting that lap. Just let him through.
But also,
there's literally no point.
And maybe that was just Lewis making a mistake. Maybe he didn't Like, you know, obviously getting frustrated when you're pushed off, you know, who knows, right, intent, teammate, right? It's like when Oscar ran into Lando in Monza.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that was intentional. I think just Oscar misjudged.
And nothing came from it. No, yeah, yeah. No, like, I don't even think I heard any team rage.
No. It was fine. It was just like, oh. I'm sure Oscar was just like, yeah, my bad. Like, you know, I thought I had more poop in my tyres. My bad. Like, you know what I mean? I just think that it's frustrating to see. Well, it's frustrating, but it's also entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining. Like
that. It was like the best thing about that race.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Apart from watching...
come on, George.
I've never been so excited to see a driver just stood in the pits. Like, apart from watching Sergio Perez in the pits for no reason.
Yeah.
The Mercedes thing was like the best thing ever.
The thing George needs to remember, Lewis is not signing another two-year deal like he has if he doesn't think, I'm going for an 8-4
title.
Well,
Mercedes can give him the car to do that.
Yes. And so George knows, like, he's... Which, again, the ball's in his court. You know, to prove that he, you know, if that Mercedes car does get competitive at the front, then he's got to beat Lewis fair and square.
Yeah, but then it does circle back to that point of, you know, team management. And I'd say, like, in that specific scenario, especially if you're going up against Red Bull, you can't afford to be taking points away from each other. Mm. You just can't. For example, Singapore was probably their best chance at getting a win all season. And if you flip the roles, if you had Lewis ahead of George in that specific scenario, I know George obviously had track position from qualifying and whatnot, but if Mercedes had said, all right, Lewis, you have better pace, you are probably more likely to win this race. Let's invite the cars.
Yeah.
Lewis would have done it. You know, in my opinion, he's proven it time and time again that he can
maybe
make up that difference or, you know, at least in the pressure moments,
deliver.
He has the ability to deliver.
Mm.
And yeah, in a championship fight, you can't, you know, you can't afford to have those kinds of
I don't think 2007.
Just to not be all
Kimi came in out of nowhere.
Exactly.
Just to not be all doom and gloom. Like at the end of the day, Mercedes, in my opinion, still have on raw pace the strongest driver lineup. I mean, I've done so many polls about this, like maybe two races ago, who has the strongest driver lineup? Mercedes still come out emphatically on top. It's not even close. Yeah. So
no,
yes, this if I did the poll right now, like McLaren might come out on top, but you know, over a course of the season, they still have two drivers with so much pace. And like if you get them working right with the right management, the right environment, you know, it could be scary hours for Red Bull if the cars were close.
Yeah, definitely.
That is it. It's just control. It's just control.
It's not all bad.
I can't. It's going to take a lot for them to pull it back, I think. I really do. But we'll see. Time will tell. And hopefully next season, from an entertainment point of view, regardless of... Is this quite funny? Bernie's just standing back to...
He's
probably closed Damon off there. We'll wrap that there. And Christian does have the merch, by the way. Ted was talking about, do Red Bull have Constructors Championship winning merch? And they do. T-shirts, they bought them out from the back.
I always wonder what happens to the merch, though, when you're in title deciders for the team that loses.
Honestly, you know there's
Lewis, a box. Yeah.
Lewis 21.
You always...
Merch.
Yeah. Has anyone seen it?
No.
It never gets released.
There was a picture of Schumacher 1997 world champion. Obviously, Jacques Villeneuve went on to win that one. But there was a picture of a cap. I think it sold on eBay or something. Like, that says 1997. That'd have been Schumacher's first title with Ferrari in 1997. And then that cap exists somewhere.
There you go.
Well, the other side's been burned.
Listen, you always see like open top buses that are just parked somewhere. And it's like, oh, they didn't win. Well, take it back.
Can I get a refund on that?
Ouch.
Yeah, imagine being the designer working on it as well. You spent all that time and then...
Yeah. Wow. That must be such a weird job. So, just never see your design.
Nah, that's very normal. I used to work for an agency.
Do you think people still put on their
work
decks,
I did that just never saw the light of day. It's quite depressing, really. But lads, let's wrap it. It's 5 to 9 in the morning.
As if we just finished the podcast at 5 to 9.
That is mad. I should still be in bed.
Book.
Ben, where can the people find you?
You can find me BMPH on both YouTube and Twitter. Mainly posting on there. So
Bosh, check him out. Yeah. Top tier videos. Aldas.
Aldas on YouTube. Aldas001 on all of the socials. Just quality content as always. quality content, but you know, it is what it is.
No, never.
Aaron, where can the people find us?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the people can find us here on YouTube. Obviously, if you're watching here, the podcast, then feel free to like and subscribe. You know the score by now. If you are an audio-only person, then we're available on all audio platforms. Give us a 5-star rating over there.
Do it.
And also find us on ASOS Marketplace.
Ooh.
But only in the sweatshirt section.
Big up.
So yeah, you just got to get on that section. You'll see that.
Maybe Etsy visuals. One day, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's visuals.
Bebo.
That's visual section.
MySpace, Bebo.
Yeah. We're still on MySpace. We're still on Bebo. We're on...
Keeping the domain alive.
Yeah. We're on SatNavs as well. We've branched out now to SatNavs. So if you've got a Garmin, then you're sorted, mate. Easy.
No sponsor.
Yeah, we're not one sponsored, day. So...
Thank you again, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next Tuesday for the next podcast.
Indeed.
Pleasure as always. Ciao, adios.
Bye. I'm going to bed.